You may be seated. Hey, good morning. I'm Jana. I'm the associate pastor here at Church of the Incarnation. I want to welcome you, especially if you're joining us for the first time. We're delighted to have you here worshiping with us. About 4 years ago, during this time, Eastertide, I spent that season huddled up with my four kids in a two-bedroom apartment in Los Angeles in a raging pandemic. You guys remember that? That happened? And during that season, I found myself over and over again just like blurting out at random to my kids, "The Lord is risen," almost trying to remind myself that there is a different future than the one that we are experiencing. And one of my children, who was three at the time, every time I said that, would look at me and say, "No, he's not. He died on the cross. See, I told you." And I would persist, "The Lord is risen." And my child would also persist, "No, he's not." And every time we come to Eastertide, where we recount these stories of what happened after the resurrection and these post-resurrection encounters with Jesus, I am reminded of that response, that there are so many responses to the resurrection. And actually, a very normative response to the resurrection of Jesus is, "No, he's not. How can that be? How can he be risen?" And so today we receive one of these stories, one of these post-resurrection encounters with Jesus, and we encounter a response. The story we received this morning is from Luke's gospel. And we enter in a moment of grief. Jesus has died. He died on the cross. I told you so. The teacher, the prophet, the Messiah, the one who was to make the whole world right. He didn't come through on it. And although there are rumors and speculations that he's not dead any longer, not everyone is convinced. And even those of us who are, we're unsure what we are to do with that information. If he's alive, what now? What does that even mean? How does that bear on our lives? And so the response that we receive this morning in this story are from two of Jesus's followers, and their response is just to get out of town, to get away from it all. They gave Jesus a shot. They hoped that he would be the one that would change everything, but now he's dead. And not only is he dead, he's been crucified in a most public, obvious way. Like, the thing that is clear is that he is, in fact, dead. And so they're asking themselves, like, were we duped? Like, did we miss something here? So sad and hopeless and disappointed and probably humiliated, they leave the rest of the disciples and they head out of Jerusalem. And this is where we pick up this story this morning. It's the afternoon of Easter Sunday, and Cleopas and his unnamed companion, maybe a friend, maybe his wife, but a fellow disciple of Jesus, they leave Jerusalem, where all the events surrounding Jesus' death have taken place, and they head towards a village called Emmaus. And we're not told a lot about Emmaus, except that for these disciples, it's a better place to be than Jerusalem. And so with their backs to Jerusalem, understandably walking away from everything that they had experienced of Jesus, they're walking along and sharing their sadness and loss with one another, trying to find comfort in each other's company, trying to find some relief, trying to accept this new normal, this hopeless place. And Cleopas and his companions are not the only ones on the road to Emmaus. Some of us are here this morning also, unsure, maybe sad and numb. We might be uncertain of what is going on. And some of us maybe have been on this road for a long time, our backs towards Jesus, heading in the other direction. And maybe we gave Jesus a shot and we're disappointed. And others of us are on this road, and maybe we're just wondering, like, where is he? Like, I believe the women who saw him, but like, what now? Where is he? If he's alive, then what is he up to? And as they are walking along the road talking, Jesus himself comes near to them and walks along with them. And I want you to notice here that they were not looking for Jesus. They were actually going the opposite direction, away from where they had last encountered him, away from his group of followers. And maybe they were very intentionally moving away from him, or maybe it was unintentional. Maybe they were just trying to move on with their life, move on to the next thing. But he comes near to them. He is the one who finds them. And they are kept from recognizing him. They don't perceive that it's him. And he asks them, "What are you guys talking about?" And they stop and look at each other, red, swollen eyes. And they look at Jesus incredulously, like, "Are you the only person that doesn't know what's going on? Are you the only stranger that doesn't know what has happened?" It would be like calling an old friend in the middle of a global crisis and checking in. And they're like, "I'm doing great. What's going on? What are you talking about?" How could this person not know? And then Jesus responds to them and pushes, "What things?" And then like a river, it flows out of them. The things about Jesus, the one who is supposed to make all things good and right, the one we put our hope in. All of our eggs were in that basket. But he died 3 days ago, and not only that, some woman went to the tomb and it was empty, and they told us they saw a vision of an angel who said he was alive, and others went to the tomb and didn't see him, and we don't know what is going on. Like, what is happening here? We don't know what to believe. And without being asked, Jesus responds very emphatically and authoritatively to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets declared." And this is a fascinating response from Jesus, and actually a response that we see over and over in these post-resurrection encounters. Jesus isn't trying to create a way of following him that doesn't require faith, even for those he appears to. God's plan is never to force people to believe or to prove beyond reasonable doubt that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus isn't interested in offering the world the kind of certainty that our modern enlightenment minds demand. Jesus' agenda is faith. His agenda is faith, and that's what he expects from those who would follow. And that is why we see this again and again in these post-resurrection encounters. He's actually surprised by their fear and unbelief. And then Jesus takes their story, he takes the story found in scriptures and the prophets and God's action through the people of God over time, and he interprets it to these disciples in light of himself. And as they're listening to him retell the story of the scriptures, a story that they know, their hearts burn inside of them and they're drawn to him. Who is this stranger that is walking along the road with us? Who is this man? But they still do not perceive who he was. And as they come near to this village, Emmaus, their destination, Jesus walks on, leaving them free to continue on without him. Jesus doesn't badger or coerce. We are free to turn our backs on him, and we are also free to follow him. But they urge him strongly to stay with them, and they invite him in They weren't quite ready to be out of the company of this stranger along the way. So he went in with them to their home. Jesus never seems to say no to those who invite him in. And as the sun was setting, they gather around the table for dinner. Jesus is the guest and Cleopas the host. And once they're seated at the table, the roles reverse. And Jesus becomes the host. And he takes the bread and he blesses it and he breaks it and he gives it to them. And their eyes are opened and they see him. They recognize him. And he vanishes from their sight. And then they look at each other. Did you see him? Yeah. Did your heart beat faster when you were on the road when he was talking about the scriptures? Yeah, I thought that was just me. And then right away, in the middle of the night, they run all 7 miles back to Jerusalem, out of breath and panting. They find the 11 disciples who had already had a similar encounter, and they were saying, "The Lord is risen. The Lord is risen." And Cleopas and his companion share with the 11 their own story, that Jesus had been made known to them in the breaking of bread. This story is framed by this progression from blindness to sight. And we might just ask ourselves this morning, like, where do we find ourselves in this story? Where do we find ourselves in this progression on this spectrum? And some of us are here this morning and feel like we're just stumbling around in the dark, desperate for light at the end of the tunnel. And others of us, we haven't even paid any attention to this question. We're walking along the road, chatting with a friend, not even considering the question, like, am I blind? Is there something that I'm not seeing? Some of us might be here this morning and our hearts are burning within us. We sense there is something true and real here. And others of us are here running as fast as we can towards Jerusalem with this news. The Lord is, in fact, risen. But the thing that's so fascinating about this story is that it actually doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum, that our perception is not the determining reality for Christ's nearness, that Christ is near without them being aware of it, that Jesus is the one who finds them on the road, and Jesus is the one who is near to them before they have an understanding or perception of his nearness. And it might be the case that Jesus is near to you and that Jesus is near to me and that we have not perceived it. The risen Christ didn't just reveal himself to a handful of people just after the resurrection. He continues to reveal himself in word and at the table, that all throughout, from the ascension till the present, Christ is revealing himself. And our whole liturgical worship is shaped around that reality that we gather together every week to encounter Jesus in his word and to encounter Jesus at his table, that Christ is ready and available, and that we can encounter him today. He is made known to us through the scriptures, and we encounter him in the Eucharist. And so I want to encourage you and challenge you this Eastertide season to lean in to encountering Jesus in word and sacrament, lean in to encountering Jesus through the scriptures and through the Eucharist. And you might be here this morning and you're not very familiar with the scriptures. Give it a go. Start with the Gospels. Lean in. And maybe you're here, and I want to say here, we have some amazing folks here at Incarnation that if the Bible is unfamiliar to you, they will be happy to read the Bible with you. Come on Sunday morning at 9 and read the Bible with folks who have been reading the scriptures for a really long time. Lean into the scriptures. And if you have been reading the scriptures for a long time, I want to encourage you, don't forsake the scriptures. Don't forsake the scriptures. They are our daily bread, and they orient us around what is true and real again and again, every day, again and again. And they position us to see the risen Christ near to us. They call us again and again into what is real. And we cannot understand what God is up to in the world without being instructed by his holy scriptures. And as we come to the table each week, to this meal of thanksgiving, thanking God for what he has done in Jesus, we come with thankful hearts and in faith, and that Christ is present to us in this meal, whether we perceive his presence or not, and we can receive him here. Aidan Cavanaugh, a Benedictine monk, puts it this way, that in the Eucharist, we find the church caught up in the act of being most overtly itself. People gathered up to receive the risen Christ and putting our faith in him again and again and again. So may we, who have gathered here this morning, wherever we find ourselves on the road, encounter the risen Lord. Amen.